Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, a show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is the ever so angry IT guy, Mr. Spencer Don't Touch My Wires Williams.
You tell one story before the podcast starts, you're getting branded for life.
You were literally still telling the story while we were doing the opening.
Nobody knew that.
Now they did. Speaking of which, the recipient of hearing that story, we got Amy with us, the intern slash stenographer slash part timer slash coffee bringer who brings no coffee slash I need to be nicer to Amy.
I'm just, yes, and I'm trying to make friends with IT people. It's very frustrating. I'm apparently just a menace.
You are. You're a menace to IT. And speaking of menaces, we brought with us Junior Filmlosopher, the tiniest of tinies, who is here with us at the table, Sarah. How you doing? You can talk.
I'm doing good. Thank you.
You're not held captive here.
There's a lot of big energy.
We lost one of the junior filmlosophers in the alleyway.
He's fine.
He rolled over fine. He was breathing.
It's fine.
What the heck did you guys do?
I don't even want to know. I supervised. I was delegated to.
We have a great show in store as... In spite of whatever horror story they're talking about, we have a conversation about the recent horror film that was dropped by the one, the only Jordan Peele, and that is Nope. So stick around as we dive into that. But before we do, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We got all the stuff you can listen to right over at our website, thefilmlosophers.com. We got everything from romance to action to comedy to conversation about the industry. We have allegedly over 300 episodes, according to Spencer. Mm-hmm. And we have stuff just for everybody. Head on over, filmlosophers.com. Also, you can check us out on any streaming platform for podcasts that include Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, Spotify, Pandora, everywhere. Check us out. Give us a subscribe. We have a great show in store as we are going to be talking about the recently dropped Jordan Peele movie. But before we do, we figured it was high time for a little bit of movie news. Within this last week, we've had a plethora of information coming out of San Diego, which is prudent for the fact that it's San Diego Comic-Con time. Mm-hmm. And with that comes usually the most bombastic of announcements, the most crazy of appearances, and the most interesting of tidbits that gets released. And with that, we're going to talk about a couple of the trailers that dropped for upcoming films. Now, mind you, the trailers weren't the only things that were dropped. There was a lot of different things. We're going to be talking about movie trailers specifically, but there was everything from TV series, books, comic books. Mm-hmm. There was
video games.
There was a lot of interesting information coming out. And of course, all of that probably curtailed a little bit for what they're going to be announcing at D23 in September.
From the House of Mouse.
But before we go into, like I said, our main discussion, a couple of the trailers we did want to talk about, and one of the first ones that we got the chance to see was the Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves. What is the table's consensus on that one? What do you guys think? Starring Chris Pine, Hugh Grant. Apparently Hugh Grant is Junior Filmlosopher Sarah's main crush.
I heard.
So she's got a sour face on now. She's not going to say anything.
No, I'm not going to now. Thank you.
But it's got a plethora. Michelle Rodriguez apparently is in this one as well. The trailer itself looks interesting. The fact that it's attached to such a high caliber name like Dungeons and Dragons really does put it not only in a niche category, but it also heightens the expectations for a game or a movie based on a role-playing RPG, you know, tabletop game. So I want to ask Amy. Amy, what do you think so far with that? What we've seen with the trailer, do you think this is going to be something that's going to hit it in theaters, or do you think it requires the Sonic Touch.
I don't think the Sonic Touch can save it.
Okay.
And this is coming from somebody who truly loves Dungeons & Dragons. Mm-hmm. I love role-playing games. I love fantasy. High fantasy, you usually get me. But everyone remembers that World of Warcraft movie? Remember how that fared?
It did very well in China.
In China. This is trying to tell a story, which I cannot fault them for, that usually is tweaked for players at the table. So everybody has a personal experience. You're going to find that coming out of this movie, there are people who are like, oh, Dungeons and Dragons, I've heard of that. Let us go watch this.
Let us go watch this.
There's going to be a lot of emulations. So while I applaud and excited for the actors to give themselves a shot at things, especially for Junior Filmlosopher's Man Crush, I'm not really excited about this. No offense.
I have to agree. And also, I don't know if you guys remember, we've already had one of these back in 2000 with Marlon Wayans. Marlon Wayans.
Yep.
So I don't know if this is the type of game you want to adapt into a film. Much like a lot of larger sandbox RPG type games that require the player to explore immensely, causing us to spend almost 30 to 40 hours in a game, it's really difficult to combine all of that into a 1.5 to 2 hour experience in theaters. The closest thing I could say that actually has done that would probably be Hardcore Henry. But there's people here at this table
that made me sick
that won't see it because it's just not. It is jarring. Like, it's a very experimental film, all done first person point of view. But I don't know. Who knows? The next trailer that we got released was John Wick 4, which Spencer said he is ready for now.
Yeah, it's just put in theaters now.
Yes.
Have you seen the first three?
Yes.
Okay, I'm just checking. Spencer's like, yeah, he's on high octane right now.
Man, one time you don't see the movie, and now it's questioning everything.
It's true. This movie looks like it's going to fall right into the same vein as the rest of them. Mm-hmm. Each film literally follows within a week's time of each other. The second film follows like 5 to 7 days after the first film. The third film follows literally 30 minutes after the second film. So I'm interested in seeing where this fourth film is going to start and kick off at, because it does look like it is going to take some time away from the main storyline so that John Wick can gather himself of some sorts. But it does look good. Like, I'm excited for it as well. I have all the John Wick films on my Vudu, and I'm actually anxious. What do you think, Games?
I'm actually in the same boat. I remember seeing the third film on my last birthday, and I kind of had binged them. And I was like, oh, when's the next one coming out? And I was like, oh, no, I have to wait. And I didn't think I was going to like it originally, and I have been pleasantly shocked, delighted, and surprised.
Yeah. Moving on, just because we have to save for time. We don't have that much time. Shazam Fury of the Gods. The trailer finally dropped for that one, and that one really has a lot of people divided. A lot of folks are looking as to seeing this as a big positive coming into the DCEU. Other people are looking at it and saying it kind of rehashes the formula of the playing up of the comedy and so forth. What do you think, Sarah, since you're the one who is, you know, very much in this?
I'm kind of excited for it. Not to say that I wanted to see someone else as Freddy because of the kid who plays him. He's getting a little bit older. But I don't have a lot of knowledge of Shazam, so I really don't know how to feel.
Did you see the first film?
I saw the first film. And okay. I kind of enjoyed it, kind of not. It was not to say that it gave off a kind of like we're laughing through the whole film type of feel, but there's kind of some things in there that I was like kind of felt left out of, if that makes any sense.
It does.
Okay. Ames, how do you feel? Seeing as you're a little bit more versed in the comics of this, and
yeah, I mean, this is setting up for face-offs usually, especially with Shazam as a character. So my biggest thing is I'm excited to see Helen Mirren. I'm always excited to see Helen Mirren, but I do understand Junior Film Lost for Sarah's input on that. It was a little kind of perplexing, and it felt more like her we're hamming it up because look at me, I got superpowers and I'm a kid, which comes into play sometimes in the comics, but not as much as it does in the movies. So I am tentatively tiptoeing into this, not because I have a disrespect for Shazam or the DC EU
yeah,
as it was. Especially they're butting up against Black Adam. So yeah, there's going to be one that's going to be woo, and the other yeah, one's going to be ooh.
Well, I feel like with Black Adam, I think what they've pushed so far is the more serious side of The Rock's performance. But if there's anything that we've seen from The Rock, I don't think we've seen him do a serious role in the last at least five years. Every
Completely
role he's
straight role, yeah.
Every role has been pretty much him playing in a comedic type or in a very casual setting. Mm-hmm. So, and by casual, I mean like non-confrontational, very relaxed. So I don't know if we're going to get him playing the straight villain, or at least the heavier side of the anti-hero that we're used to with Black Adam. But I don't know. I really don't know if they're going to be able to make Shazam be on par with what we get from Black Adam in terms of that power set and seeing him perform. If they're trying to prep Zachary Levi to be the foil, if you will, for Black Adam, going to be interesting.
Well, and then you double up, real brief aside, then you double up that he's the foil for Superman, and so you're putting him against Henry Cavill, and that's a different beast in its entirety. But I have no idea what that their extended slate setup looks for whatever phase DC is in.
I don't even know if they have phase. This is all still phase one.
They're phase confused.
Which, side note to all that, I don't know if... Did Henry Cavill actually ever do his grand appearance at San Diego? I don't think he did.
I don't know, but I know that...
Because it was rumored for a while that they were like, oh, Henry Cavill's going to show up. He's got this great big event announcement and blah, 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 blah.
I didn't hear anything about that, but when The Rock showed up in full regala, whatever you would prefer and pronounce it, in Hall H, there were so many phone videos of that thing. Oh, my goodness.
Mm. Well, bringing us to our last trailer, and probably, I think we can all here at the table safely say, probably one of the more important trailers, and that is the teaser trailer for Wakanda Forever. Mm-hmm. This trailer was a visual art piece, to say the least, you know, and honestly, it's not hiding anything regarding the fact that they're going to honor the life of not only T'Challa, but Chadwick Boseman in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's a really important tone to set. And with the director coming back, Ryan Coogler, being on the helming end of this, you know, ship, the fact is that knowing that he's going to take care of that puts me at ease, but it also makes me worrisome because I'm like, I'm not about to start bawling my eyes out like 5 minutes into Black Panther 2.
We're all gonna anyway. Yeah, see, let's be honest.
I don't want to.
Yeah.
But we know it's coming.
Yeah, I do. And that's like, ever since he died, I was like, oh, I don't want to see Black Panther 2 because I know it's gonna be, I'm just gonna be a wreck during this movie. And I'm kind of not here for that part.
I'm here for all of it. That's the best part for me. Like, I started just the opening notes from No Woman, No Cry in that trailer. I was like, no.
I am happy about like really good music though.
Yeah. You're like, well, yes. And it's Ryan Coogler. So like if we remember how like that first soundtrack for Black Panther was like came across, that was a beautiful soundtrack.
Fantastic.
Like
one of Marvel's best.
I am so glad I got it for you.
Yeah.
On vinyl. But he has such a great ear for music that isn't so much just focused on one aspect of the whole experience. And so I'm interested, including the fact that he has Namor.
He looks amazing.
Who looks fantastic.
Fan-flippantastic. Let's be just straight up honest about that. He can keep... Everyone's like, oh, he's wearing a spindle. He's got pointy ears. And then you saw that trailer and you're like, oh, dang.
Well, and so... Yes. And the fact that you have... So, I'm not too familiar with Namor's previous, like, heritage. But in this one, you have actor Tanakh Huerta, who is... Mexican, who is bringing that culture to the table of the MCU. And someone had posted, a friend of mine had posted on Twitter and said, you know, I feel like this is a big win for all of us because apparently the actor came out and said, you know, we finally made it, something along those lines. And it's like, I remember responding like, yeah, because we did this. And the fact that we're getting a chance to see ourselves represented on screen in that way that just really surpasses what any of us thought we could ever be, other than, you know, the side character B or the cleaning person or this is that. Like, the fact that we are being represented on screen by a major character, it really says a lot for a lot of people. And, you know, it's going to be great, and I'm excited for it. I'm not as excited in the way of, like, really having the heavy emotions when it comes to the portion where they discuss the loss of, you know.
Like, I'm telling you now, in the reveal, I'm just going to be like, I'm not here for this part of the movie.
In other words, it'll just be me crying, and you'll just be sitting here shaking your head. No, like, I'll just be here. You're like, put me on mute, let me cry.
Put me on mute. So there's been a lot put out by San Diego, and if you haven't had a chance to check out all the great articles that are out there, all the great releases, all the interesting information about the series...
There's lots and lots of series that are coming out that we didn't even touch on that we're very excited about.
Prequels to Game of Thrones. We got Lord of the Rings. Prequels to Lord of the Rings. Sandman. We got the Sandman series on Netflix.
Season 2 of Chucky.
Season 2 of Chucky.
She-Hulk.
I Am Groot. There's so much stuff coming out. You need to go out and check it out. Find something that you're looking for and then just dive into it and take a look. But yeah, it looks like they got a lot of great stuff coming down the pipeline.
Yep.
Well, that brings us to our main conversation of today, and that is the conversation of Jordan Peele's Nope. This movie honestly has been on everybody's mind. Everybody has been talking about it, has been trying to speculate about it, and for good reason, because it's Jordan Peele. The man who has created his junior film, I guess, if he's done his freshman, sophomore, his junior film, has really done himself in a different direction, and it's very unique, but we'll talk about that before we dive too far into it right now. So, Spencer, before we continue, why don't you give us the official synopsis goodness?
After random objects falling from the sky result in the death of their father, ranch-owning siblings OJ and Emerald Haywood attempt to capture video evidence of an unidentified flying object with the help of tech salesman Angel Torres and documentarian Antlers Hoist.
Yeah, that's right. Written, directed, and co-produced by Jordan Peele under his Monkey Paw Productions banner, the film stars Daniel Kaluuya, Kiki Palmer, Steven Yeun, Brandon Perea, Michael Wincott, Ren Schmidt, and Keith David. A couple pieces of information about the film. Jordan Peele cites 1933's King Kong, Jurassic Park, the 1993 Jurassic Park, 1977's Close Encounters of the Third Kind, 2002's Signs, and 1939's The Wizard of Oz as the film's influences. Peele said he wrote the script, quote, at a time when we were a little bit worried about the future of cinema. So the first thing I knew is I wanted to create a spectacle. I wanted to create something that the audience would have to come to see, or that I have to come see. And then last bit of information, which I thought was pretty important, because I don't know about the rest of you, but fries has always held a special place in my heart.
Same. It's most so nice.
Despite being featured prominently in the film, Fry's Electronics went out of business prior to the film's release. I feel like this is perfect grounds to do a petition to bring Fry's back. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I'm still mad that our local fries was a Western-themed one instead of a space-themed one like the movie got.
I mean, yeah.
Wait, which one is that one?
The Rose
the
one.
No, the one in... well, actually, both of them were, yeah.
No.
Yeah, the
Natomas. The Natomas one was space one.
Was no, it wasn't. It was. Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was Western-themed.
No.
The train is the Roseville one.
Yeah.
No.
The train was at
the one in Natomas is Western.
It's okay, Spencer.
I've lived here longer than you. Of course I know. It's so dumb because you walk in and then there's all these horses and like old timey things on the side. And you're like, what are you doing? You sell electronics. This is so antithetical to your entire store.
You made the IT man very upset. Please
don't. Oh, I'm just. I'm
no,
just,
the fries did this.
There you go.
We're Western.
Well, yeah, fries, get your stuff together. So
they didn't.
That's so obviously they didn't. We're going to be discussing this film at length. And of course, because of the nature of this movie, we do have to warn you, we are going to divulge some spoilers about the movie. Honestly, the film has a very kind of easy trajectory. If you're familiar with any of the movies that we've mentioned in terms of inspiration for or influences, but all in all, spoiler alert, just so you know, we are going to be talking about some spoilers. So this is a very different style of movie coming from Jordan Peele as to what we're used to, because the last two films that we did he came out with was Get Out and Us, very much dealing with social commentary topics and very obvious like allusions to things that he can kind of connect with, whether if it's like a classism or racism. Mm-hmm. There's a sense of personal touch that he adds to those other films when it comes to the explanations for those two. This one's a little different.
Yeah.
I don't know. One of the biggest takeaways in the trailers and in the marketing material, if you will, for this movie, was the fact that this was definitely going to be something big and bombastic. It wasn't something, you know, subtle or some kind of subterfuge, like with, you know, folks trying to implant, you know, other people's brains in other heads, or something to the effect of like there's an underground world of doppelgangers. This is flat out an alien movie. And if you don't believe me, it's in the trailer. There's literally a UFO chasing Daniel Kaluuya. So there's not much to interpret there, but a lot of the beauty in this movie falls in its minor parts. A lot of the smaller, intricate kind of facets of storytelling that it does. And so what I wanted to do first, I want to talk about expectations, but with the expectations, I wanted it to be within the light of where your guys' view of most alien films have come about in the last 20, 30 years. Where do you guys see in terms of what were some of the expectations built upon for this one based on what you've seen with Jordan Peele and with alien movies? If you get what I'm saying. Spencer, you look a little... kerfluffled.
Yeah, no, I get what you said. I just...
Oh, you're just thinking.
No, I just didn't... I didn't think it'd be comparable when I was going into this, so I didn't bother.
Oh, okay.
That. Because, like, most of his... Well, his only other two have always been like, hey, the movie's about this, but then there's also this. And so yeah. I kind of didn't really care about the surface-level movie. I was like, what's the story underneath if there's going to be a story underneath this time? So, like, I was more down on that level of the movie. That's why I looked confused.
And what were your expectations there other than just that you were waiting to see Jordan Peele pull the rug out from under you?
Yeah. I think in his other movies, it was a bit easier to parse what potentially you could be running into. The only thing I really noticed in this one is the, like from the trailer was the use of the word spectacle. Like that always just seemed to pop out there, but that was about it.
Hmm. What about you, Ames?
Do we want my expectations? Well, I guess I kind of have to do expectations. I was going, oh, what kind of alien movies have I seen?
Well, okay, talk about that. Like, because what I want to see is if you guys, because when I looked at this movie, when I saw the trailers, especially the last trailer, because I tried to avoid every other trailer after that second trailer, because it just seemed to want to give away more and more. After that second trailer where you have the reveal of that huge, massive spaceship chasing after Daniel Kaluuya, I immediately was like, okay, this is an alien movie. So what have I already experienced that I can put into play with this? Because I at the same time, I did have the same mentality that you did, Spencer. Mm-hmm. I understood this is a Jordan Peele movie. I may come in with the expectation that they're talking about Thanksgiving, and then he's going to flip it and it turns into a time machine movie about classism in the back of Pioneer Days or something. Like, knowing him, he'll do something like that. But at the same time, when you have something as large and as, for lack of a better term, obvious as a spaceship on screen, there is a very, in my mind, there's not a lot of like opposite-ended social commentary you can do outside of illegal aliens. Or like, I know that he probably could, but I don't know if there was really going to be anything fully departing from the alien focus. Like, I felt like he was going to incorporate whatever his message or whatever his concept was with the fact that there are aliens in the movie.
I have something to talk about that, but I don't think this is the right place for that because we're talking about experiences first, so I'm going to hold on to my thought. But
that's a first.
I know, right? I had to have it like, oh, she's checking herself. But in relation to alien movies, the very first one, and I pointed it out, that came to mind was Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
You're talking about prior to seeing this,
prior
right?
Prior to seeing this, yeah. I've also seen the trailer, hilariously enough, with that last one where the UFO was chasing Daniel Kaluuya, was Flight of the Navigator for some reason. I saw, like,
I like
so,
that movie, though.
Right? So Arrival, I don't know if we count Spaceballs, but I'm counting it anyway.
Alien, are you just talking about aliens. Alien movies you've seen?
Yes.
Okay, so you're once not even talking about the ones that pertain to this.
No, you asked for my like experience with...
That pertain to this.
Oh, that pertain to this?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because like... Okay. So then, hold on.
So then, sorry, because your question made it sound like you wanted to know what my experience was prior with what, Alien
with
and sci-fi.
The Alien... Okay, pause real quick. Thank you. Pause. The question, which I thought was pretty clear, Spencer, the question was that what with the Alien movies you had seen, what were your expectations with this through the lens of Alien movies as well as Jordan Peele movies? Spencer, is that not what it came across?
Yeah, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. So
that's all I needed.
So with that regard, I really didn't know what to expect, to be very honest. Having seen Jordan Peele's other work, there's always a level of horror and social commentary that's come through, which you've already stated. But then seeing what he's done where he picked up for Twilight Zone... And he had some of his reimagining. There was nothing that I could expect in relation to those. There was still social commentary. There was still another theme underneath. But I didn't really know what to expect, except I was slightly anxious and I did not want to like scream. I did not want to scream. I did not want to be scared. So I was like, please don't be scary, please. And yeah, I still got scared.
Sarah. What were some of your expectations? And I've already explained it twice, so I'm kind of hoping that you understand what I'm asking.
I didn't know what I was really expecting going in because I haven't seen a lot of alien movies besides like kind of like almost the like kind of you need to watch movies like Alien, Predator, probably not Cloverfield Paradox.
That's an alien movie.
Well, Like you need to watch that
one. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Like, I've seen that one.
Like, on a list, like, oh, this is an absolute must-see alien movie.
Like, that was, I kind of...
Because I would not say that.
I just stumbled across it and was like, I'm going to watch it. Like, it wasn't... I'm going to watch it. It was... I needed to watch it for some reason. But also, in the 2019 Jordan Peele run for Twilight Zone, they did an episode where it was... I believe it was a space shuttle that was trying to find another life on Earth. It was called, like, 6 Degrees of Freedom.
And it I remember that one. I think they did... Did they do two of those?
Was that the one where they had blasted off and it was like the end of Earth and they were in space for like ever?
I believe it was, but also it was the one where the dude kept checking the vents for like life forms growing.
And the rotation of the toilet bowl water.
Oh.
Yeah, I remember that one.
That episode's like gave me kind of nervousness, and I kind of was holding on to that when going into the movie, of like some of those aspects of how the director for that episode, with working with Jordan Peele to tell that story, like I was trying to see how that might be incorporated, like not like the story wise for that episode, being like, oh, it's in this episode, but that type of that feel and engagement and nervousness in a sense. Yeah. Like excited nervousness.
Hmm. The foreboding dread.
Yes.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think some of the biggest things for me, because you have Jordan Peele, and because there's this underlying like idea in the trailers that there might be like quote unquote people among us. Mm-hmm. Which I feel bad now, knowing who that woman in that wheelchair is now.
we all did. Let's be very honest. We're like, oh no,
like Gordy, no. I feel like I've seen a lot of alien movies. Some of the more aggressive horror type ones, not so much like thriller, but actual horror ones. Like Fire in the Sky, 1993's Fire in the Sky is a huge, it's a very large and well-known extraterrestrial film that it pretty much is about these four people who have the same experience, except one of them actually gets abducted. And he is slowly remembering what happened when he got abducted. Ugh. And the movie has a very graphic portrayal, not graphic in the bad way, but like very vivid portrayal of how he gets examined and probed and everything while he's up there.
Thank you.
Also, and I believe I had let Junior from Lost for Sarah know about this one, because she knows a lot about Alaska, and so there's the movie the Fourth Kind that is out there that is actually a really good movie. Regarding a lot of the information pertaining to an investigation going on in the town of Nome, Alaska, and that one's really like, it's scary because of the realism to it, and I think a lot of that is what Jordan Peele really wanted to build off of. Like, I was expecting a feeling of realistic loss and dread. Amidst the backdrop of very unique and enigmatic characters. Like you see Kiki Palmer's character. You know, you don't know the dynamic of their relationship until you see the movie, but in the trailer, she looks like she's very fun. She's very, you know, flamboyant. There's a lot of parts of this trailer that make you feel like there's going to have really high highs, but then it's also going to have really low lows. And the biggest expectation I had for me was to be prepared to find another level of fear within extraterrestrials that is going to either meet or surpass Fire in the Sky. Because that's essentially what all of us had read or heard about the article prior to watching the movie, that Jordan Peele says that if, you know, someone asked him, one of the trades asked him, you know, what is this movie about? And Jordan Peele said in the interview, if there's one word I could say that it's about, it would be spectacle. Mm-hmm. So the word spectacle and the idea of aliens means there's going to be something big going on. And I was just expecting that, like, honestly, that was the biggest thing I was expecting. I was expecting to see a whole nother level of extraterrestrial filming, you know, extraterrestrial filmmaking. But diving in, let's talk about first impressions as soon as the lights came up and the film was over. Let me have Sarah first. What were your first impressions right out the gate without giving anything away yet?
If it makes sense to say, I was still processing, and I was kind of...
Mr. Spencer says that all the time. You know, he's always still processing. And that's just him getting out of the shower.
Okay.
That's true. But no, I was not. A little bit blown away by kind of the story and some of the acting.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I was still processing with that ending.
Ah.
So I'm going to leave it at that because, yeah.
Okay. What about you, Amy?
First impression, much like Junior Philosopher, there was a lot of processing. I think that's the first thing. I was just like, whoa. For the ending, for the contents, for what I was taking away from it, there's a lot in here. And you can start kind of pulling it apart piece by piece, figuring out what you liked, what you didn't like. But yeah. And then I was like, is there an end credit? Is there an end credit sequence or a mid credit somewhere in there? Maybe? Okay.
What about you, Spence?
Okay. So like everyone else, processing. Yeah.
Yeah, apparently.
The theme of the movie.
It
processing.
Is.
And then immediately followed by, I have to see this again because like, this is one of those movies where it's like, I wish I was watching this at home so I could just rewind up just to hear some people say certain lines again.
Makes you wish you would have let me take that video camera with us when we went to go see it in theaters.
I know nothing about this.
Yeah. What?
And then last impression is I have never in my life heard the word spectacle so much in one movie.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true. Or is it that the fact that you knew to look out for it now, so it became more apparent every time you heard it?
Possibly. Because, like, also when he used it, I was like, who uses this word?
Right? If I think spectacle, I think glasses.
Yeah, you think the, like, Snapchat spectacles.
Yeah. So
really?
You
guys do?
Yeah,
I think of a ghost. I think of a spectator.
That's a specter.
Oh, specter. My bad.
You've been playing too many video games.
I think of like circuses and ridiculousness and like just over the top. I've always thought of spectacles as something larger than life.
I think the fact of the matter is that it's not a word that's commonly used nowadays in the English language for most conversations.
True.
Unless you're in marketing or you're somebody who is promoting an event on a very large and grand scale, the word spectacle doesn't really have a lot of usage for you. I mean, nobody is ever going to be like, oh my God, look at that in the toilet. Do you see this spectacle? Like, not many people are really...
I think you lost your glasses in the toilet, let's be honest.
Or you dropped a log. The fact of the matter is, the word spectacle doesn't always seem to come across a lot of our lips when it comes to conversation. And I think that's where a lot of it now in lies. Because it doesn't so much happen in our day-to-day conversation, the fact that it was appearing almost in every like 15 to 20 minutes in either a conversation or, you know, the conversation about it, it just seemed like it was happening a lot and it was very widely used in this one. So I agree. Was there anything else?
No.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay, just checking.
And the first impressions for me.
Okay, end of it.
End of first impressions.
I would say my first impression right out the gate was that this movie is definitely different than the first two movies he's made. That's the first, like, that was my first thought coming out. I didn't have a lot processed by then. In fact, go figure, there was another marketing group that was outside of our theater that was taking information for the film and whatnot. And I'm like, I do these on the regular. I don't want to do another one because then it's going to make me think. And then it hit me. It's like, oh, but I'll be forced to think if I do it. And then I regretted it because the dang thing was like 4 pages long. And so I'm like, this is a waste. Because I even after all that, I didn't get enough going in my head to really kind of lay the groundwork for understanding this picture. Because it's like, every time you see a movie like this, it is like being given a different numbered numbered piece puzzle. Like certain movies, it's like you just saw the movie, here's the 5-piece puzzle, figure it out. And you're like, oh, I could do this in my sleep. The movie's about this. Other movies are like 1,000-piece, 5,000-piece, 20,000. I don't know how, I don't do puzzles. I don't know how what the typical scale is on numbers, but like this movie was like 1,000-piece puzzle. And it's like, you know, a lot of the pieces kind of had their own area and their own thing, but it still was a little difficult to kind of put the pieces together. And this was one that I had to really think about and really kind of ponder, because as much as it differed from the first two, I also didn't want to dismiss it for not having anything to say. You know, that was the biggest thing. I didn't want to come out of this movie and be like, well, this is Jordan Peele's throwaway, or, you know, this is his M. Night Shyamalan moment. You know, he's hit that part in his career. I don't ever want to get to that point with Jordan Peele, because I feel like Jordan Peele has a very unique and capable as well as like fulfilling mind. Like, he is definitely jumping hurdles and creating ways where there haven't been ways for in filmmakers in a long time.
Right.
So that was the biggest thing for me. I didn't want to dismiss it for it just being an alien movie. I wanted to really grasp what I understood out of it, you know? And so, all that to say, I really didn't have anything first impressions. The biggest thing, like I said, that I took away as soon as I left was, this is not like Get Out and Us. This is not one of those types of films. This is not in that vein where if you look at Get Out and you have Us, it's not exactly like alike in the same universe. They're just similar in the vein of how much it's trying to show a message of sorts. This movie is not like that. Does it still have a message? Yes. Was it as easy to see as the other two? Probably not, you know, but the fact remains is that, you know, I knew that there had to be more than what was just seen on the screen. So, and that drives us to our first conversation part of this, which is the acting. We have a great performance between Daniel Kaluuya and Kiki Palmer, the two main characters in the film, brother and sister playing OJ and Emerald. Keith David has a very short but still meaningful appearance in the beginning of the film.
I mean, I could always use more Keith David.
I can always.
Like, give Keith me more pictures up on the wall. Let's have some flashbacks. Like, give me.
Yeah, it's Keith David. How can you say no to that?
Yeah.
Like, bring him back as a force ghost or something. I don't know. Like,
I thought the same thing.
Just bring him back and have him with a flamethrower or something. You know, pull an Independence Day with a Return of the Jedi and have him just go to town.
He rides on Ghost the Horse and he's just like, hello.
See? There you go.
There you go.
That's what I was originally thinking. Hello, boys, I'm back, and does the whole Independence Day thing. You had also a great performance by Steven Yeun,
yes.
Who plays Jupe. And really, I think one of the biggest things to note about this movie is that Steven Yeun's character, his story is separated. Even though they're connected by like the small bridge of the fact that they all live in the same area, it's separated, or that they deal with like selling horses, it's separated pertaining to the journey that Emerald and OJ are on.
Yeah.
Like, I believe, for me, that felt very distinct. What is his name in the movie?
What?
Because I keep calling him Jupe, but I know he has a first name. Ricky.
Ricky Jupe.
I
didn't even know his name was Ricky.
I had no idea. I was like, all I remember was Jupe.
Yeah, I remember that.
Because it was his quote name in the middle of the sitcom. And we're like, he's like, I'm Little Jupe. And we're like, what?
Because I feel like Ricky's whole journey in this movie is completely separated out from what OJ and Emerald are facing. But Amy, you're looking at me weird. Do you think about that?
Well, I kind of want you to expound on it. So,
well, my thought is that the journey for Jupe is much different because of the fact that his story is affected by something that happens in a separate story plot in the film. I guess going into detail, throughout this film, we have semblances of this 90s sitcom called Gordy's Home. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's essentially a early 90s, probably mid-90s sitcom about a NASA employed house it seems like the mom and dad both work for NASA. Mm-hmm. And they have a chimpanzee who lives with them, and they have two kids. One is Steven Yeun's character as a child, as well as another little girl. And during the course of one episode, a balloon pops, causes the chimpanzee to lose it, and the chimpanzee goes on a rampage, more than likely killing people. It's not really noted. There is someone who gets seriously deformed, but they essentially have to put the chimp down.
Okay, like saying the words "put the chimp down" does not come across as how brutal.
Well, because I want people to be able to see it. I don't. If I'm going to paint the pictures for them, what's the point of them going to the movies to see it?
Still plenty of point.
But I feel like that in itself is its own story. It's its own journey. The story for Ricky is its own journey. It's its own story. Ricky is looking to become unique and a spectacle himself by harnessing a spectacle that he's discovered in his own backyard. And the journey to coming to that point, even on the edge of seeing what a spectacle looks like by having a private shrine to what had happened on that sitcom. That room that he has a special secret room just dedicated to the show. The majority of the stuff that's in there is not dedicated to the show. It's dedicated to the episode. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there is a unique and different journey that Ricky is on as opposed to OJ and Emerald. OJ and Emerald are on their own journey that they're doing when it comes to
trying to capture the video of the UFO.
Exactly. Does that make sense now, Miss Amy?
Yes and no, because there's a person that we're leaving out that connects both of those together, which is Antler, who's the filmmaker.
He doesn't connect with Ricky because he's not there.
He's not with Ricky. He was with the movie.
So this is why I say this. It's profit out of tragedy. So Ricky's entire push is, yes, the spectacle of what happened to him as a child star. And him profiting from the tragedy that he not only experienced, but other people experienced. And Antler is in the same thing. They're both chasing that goal of profit for that one moment of utter, like, the display of chaos. So it's...
Antler's doing that because, like, I got the impression that it wasn't so much about the money for him, it was about the shots.
Yeah.
Because, like, when, like, we see him earlier in the movie, he's, like, just watching, like, film. I have no idea what he's doing because, like, it doesn't look like he shot that, but, like, he's, like, constantly, like, looking at film reels. So I just made the assumption that, like, the reason he wanted to even be a part of this was because he wanted to be the one to get the impossible shot.
Yeah.
So it could be famous for that, having that shot be well executed and well done to where it's super clear. In
you
sense.
Mean still profiting from...
No, the- because you're equating profit for fame and for notoriety, which is what the idea of the spectacle is.
Which is what... Ricky was aiming no, to do he with wasn't his starlight.
No, so like you're missing
me
so,
and you're
because you
discounting
you,
an idea
because you took what I said and you discounted it immediately to give us your own thoughts, which is why even Spencer had to be like, I don't think so. This is what I feel. Look, I get what you're saying, but I feel like the issue is that the main premise of this film is not to have, and I believe this is something that Jordan Peele has talked about at length as well. The movie is not about profit. It's never been about profit. It's about spectacle. It's about notoriety. It's about getting the shot. Well, I mean, we even have the same thing with the TMZ driver, the TMZ person who...
Getting views,
who's working on, you know, talking about, don't you want to be famous? Don't you want to be noticed? Don't you want to be...
Known
you know,
for being this person.
The idea of the film is not... Because if Ricky wanted to worry about making money, then he would probably have built out more on that place. Like, he would have packed out that whole entire area rather than just the people he had there. But
that
the fact
was his family and friends event night.
No, it wasn't. Yes. He just had his employees in that special area, which he says in the movie, thanks to my employees who are up here in the stands, make sure you guys don't drink too much. Like,
because it was his... So in the timeline, he invites OJ and Em mm-hmm. to his friends and family viewing for the Starlight Lasso experience, or the Star Lasso experience, whatever it's
called.
Yeah,
Star Lasso experience.
And that's the flyer that he has when we see that afternoon, what evening, whatever performance.
So if it was about profit, do you think he would have just relegated that to that showing and not try to pack the house out? The idea is not to create... So the idea of spectacle is not to create profit. It's to create notoriety. And it's to create infamy. It's to create recognition. Because that's... it's literally the basis of how to... not get taken up by the spaceship, to not notice it, not to not pay it. You know, I was like, oh, I can't give it my quarters today. I got to keep walking. No, it was
speedwalk.
It was to not look at the thing and you'll live, which is what's explained in the movie.
Does notoriety not also in turn equate to monetary gains later on down the line?
No, not always.
I'm going to talk about an actor that I liked.
Thank you.
Daniel Kaluuya.
That's why.
That man, like, he can be in anything. One of the, like, I feel like I really liked, like, his difference from, like, Get Out and Black Panther in this one. Because, like, in the other two movies, like, well, like, to differing extents, like, he's much more talkative and active. In this movie, he's, quite a bit more reserved, where, like... there's a part where he has to, like, you know, go through his safety spiel for being around the horse. And, like, he sounds like he does not want to be there, really.
Yeah, he sounds like he's the worker, not the showman, which sounds like that's what his dad was. His dad was the showman. So I get you on that. It was a very interesting play on that character, especially for somebody like Daniel Kaluuya.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know if you've seen that episode for Black Mirror. But he got one of his bigger starts in an episode of Black Mirror where he plays somebody. It's a whole ordeal, but he ultimately becomes a kind of like figurehead on a like closed circuit TV show, and he's very passionate and he's very like he's amped in the show. And to come from that to this particular role as well, like it's night and day.
Yeah.
Like the incomplete opposite of this role is that first role he did. And mind you, he's more outspoken a bit in like Get Out, and I appreciate that. I really do like that. Whereas he's more subservient in Black Panther, but he's a warrior still.
Yeah. Well, he spoke out when like things that he didn't like were happening.
So I agree with you. I think Daniel Kaluuya really is showing his multifaceted ability as an actor. I really do hope that. Because there were reports that he's not returning to this Black Panther movie, the sequel. But I do hope he's not gone from the franchise as a whole.
Right.
Because I feel like there's more, I believe, his ability can contribute to the overall story element for that. So. Yeah.
Plus, it's nice to see him not be like a Ryan Reynolds type or like a Rock type where like they have this one specific thing, they're good at it, and that's it.
Yeah.
So like, you know, real acting. I like it.
And he does a really great job for, I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen this, but he's an English actor.
Yeah, okay. I saw him on, what was it? It was like Vanity Fair, and like he spoke with his regular accent. I was like, I forgot.
He's English, yeah. Like from Get Out and from this movie, like I would have never thought, like,
I'm very jealous of British people and their ability to perfectly get like an American accent.
Whereas Americans are like, hello, love, how are you today? Like, we can't even do any kind of an accent properly.
No, someone said that's offensive, I'd be like, I get it.
I get it, yeah. I would call myself offensive too. Just was there anybody else that stood out to you guys? Amy?
You're staring at the junior film philosopher first.
Oh, okay.
Well, I really enjoyed Steven Yeun's performance because he brought a lot to even being a secondary character. And like you said, that his story kind of felt like a little bit, not fully separated, but a different plot line than the main one with M and OJ. And I actually really just enjoyed seeing him and his acting performance, and then the interactions and him bringing up the Gordy Show incident. Well, also, the only place that I remember him from, because I haven't seen a lot of his the shows or things he's been in, has been actually Twilight Zone again. He was the Traveler.
Oh, that's right, the Traveler.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that one. Yeah.
You know what's interesting?
In Alaska.
yeah, love Alaska.
I tried as hard as I could to differentiate Steven Yeun's character in this with Steven Yeun's character in Sorry to Bother You. Because I came in with a chip on my shoulder a little bit. I'm like, you cheated. You took Lakeith Stanfield's girlfriend. For a little bit, I'm like, because I was like, I don't want to look at him weird, but he did him dirty. But Steven Yeun is a very well-rounded actor. I mean, everything from Minari that's come out recently to a lot of the smaller films that he's done. Sorry to Bother You, he's great in that one. Obviously, his stint on The Walking Dead. He has really made a name for himself. And kudos to him as being a really great and outstanding performer and representative for the, you know, Pan Pacific Islander.
Yeah.
That Asian market. Yes. As performers and actors. So, yeah. Now can I look that way? Stenographer Ames over there.
Yeah. So everyone's kind of hit almost everybody. So acting I want to definitely shout out is the one person who seemed to be almost the everyman nerd, Angel Torres, your Fry's electronic technician. The enthusiasm that came with this actor, especially in this role, was just utterly hilarious to me. He balanced really well, but also gave a lot of great space for brevity, and I think that's why the film wasn't as scary to me, because it was just like, oh, I'm not gonna say he's an idiot, but it was like, oh, we've got that guy that's like not freaky, he's freaking out, but he's like, I'm freaking out, instead of like, I'm freaking out. And then the other actors that I want to actors I don't know, the animals that were not CGI, sorry Gordy, that the horses in particular, seeing all of the work and knowing that they actually had trained horses, that was one of the things in the credits I was looking for. They actually had the licensed horse trainers and handlers on set with those animals, and I'm just like, holy smokes. Especially when you see that not only are they a massively pivotal part of the story, but that Jordan Peele made sure that they were using real horses. I mean, except for being sucked up into things. But other than that, they did a great job. Yay, animals.
It was interesting to pretty much create that connection between horses, trained horses, and the history of cinema in itself. Yeah, it definitely, I think Angel really did play a really good part in the whole film as well. I think one of the things that still bugs me is the fact that he worked at Fry's. But
I feel like the part where he violated people's privacy is the part that bothered me.
Maybe that's what happened. Maybe that's why Fry's went out of business.
Probably.
Some secret, like, little underhanded dig at Fry's or something that Jordan Peele knows. Like, you guys are going to go to jail. In regards to the story itself, in regards to the uniqueness of the film, obviously we are looking at an alien film on the surface. But in terms of the complexity of the story, based on what we've seen with prior, and I'm just talking about Jordan Peele movies, do you guys feel like this movie has a lot of subtext to it, much like its previous films?
Yes, but I feel like it is not as easily viewable. And it could just be because, like, at least speaking to Get Out, like, that one was just, like, looking at me and being like, racism. And I was like, I get it, yes. This one, like, required a bit more thinking, but it was still, like, speaking something, but I was like, I must process this a little bit more before, like, I feel like I truly get it, you know?
What do you think, Ames?
Yeah, I can agree with Spencer on that. In relation also to us, there is so many layers in that as well. And I was reading an article about the elasticity of the themes within us. It's not just about classism and racism. It's about it's also about identity and self. And you can keep going and going and going. So there was some processing time necessary for that, because it wasn't as easily recognizable for me. This movie was, it took processing time. Even coming in knowing, but we knew the one word Jordan Peele had said, this is what it's going to be about. And finding myself questioning if it truly was just that one word or if there was something deeper in it. So it's the complexity of it's increasing and it's evolving. I think that's the best way I could say it.
I have to agree. I feel like this story, the biggest difference between this movie and the other two, I feel like is the... It's very much open for interpretation, but at the same time, this story is rich with different facets of information that you could literally sit and chew on this for as much time as you need, and you could probably get something else from it, and you could probably get something else with a little bit more time, and you could probably get something else with a little bit more time after that.
Like a gobstopper.
Yes, like a gobstopper.
Sorry, not bring to make around. Reference to Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, but
I feel like, but in that same frame of mind, if you wanted to, you could just take the story as is, stop the thought process there, and still walk away with a good story. I think this is one of those types of movies because Get Out requires thinking. Get Out requires the mindset that yes, it's about a brain swap and so forth and so forth, but in that it's not something unique and rich to that perspective, and adding to it the incredible, you know, subtle under cues and the undertones of the film, it adds to the richness of the overall setup. It adds to the overall richness of what you're receiving. Us is a little bit, it's slightly different. The movie itself is really trippy on surface level. It's definitely something that'll probably give you nightmares. Mm-hmm. On a subtext level, like on a sub level, there is a lot of different parallels to classism. There's a lot of parallels to you know, the haves and have nots. There's a lot of like the whole idea of like your psyche, the evil side of you, everybody having a evil doppelganger. Like there's a lot of thought going into that in terms of everything else beneath the surface. This movie can, I feel like this movie can go both ways solidly. We have a huge fan base already when it comes to alien movies. I feel like the movie on its surface has a lot of work put into it that really makes it stand out in terms of the experience and the amount of information you can gather from it. Likewise, if you are somebody who wants to look further, I think this only speaks more highly to the genius of Jordan Peele in creating a movie that is so multifaceted that even on the plainest side, it is still a perfect diamond. But if you take time to inspect the rest of it, you'll find a multitude of different facets of the story that can go deeper and deeper and deeper, much to the akin of like how Us is. Like Us, on just the amount of time that we've had with it and the amount of time people have studied it, there's so much people have gotten out of it. I feel like this is one of those ones that both as just the story as is and how the story could be interpreted, there's a lot to it. I don't know. What do you think, Sarah?
I have to agree on that. Because so I'm a person who like partly likes looking into things and finding out new things and expounding upon it, but not to the point where I'm like, oh, did you see this part and this part and oh no, this part. I really agree on the part of if you just walk away with it's an alien movie and just the story, you can be like filled and satisfied with that, but looking into it,
definitely
you have and this is just my personal opinion, you have being a spectacle, not being a spectacle, watching spectacles and the idea of sort of like, and this sounds like going on a stretch here, but the media's need for, we need something new in place for people to be talking about. And because kind of not to throw my generation into like a kind of not hole, but there's a lot of, well, you need to see this, and why aren't you talking about this? And oh, you're not going to be kind of a part of conversations if you don't know every single facet of what happened.
Yeah, the lack of awareness because of how much you know about a situation or not. Like for instance, I think one of the biggest examples of that kind of spectacle for us slightly older folk is that the whole situation with the Amber Heard and Johnny Depp trial. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that was probably the biggest spectacle in the last year and a half, pertaining to specifically the trial, not so much the whole situation with their relationship. But as soon as that trial began, it was like everybody was glued to their phones, everybody was glued to their TVs, everybody was glued to their computers, tablets, and etc.
And to their social media platforms to talk about it actively.
Yeah, to talk about it actively, to watch the live streams of the trial going on, the memes, the jokes. Mind you, I really didn't care much for it. I'm not too much, you know, into that kind of conversation pertaining to that. But the fact is that it was somebody's trial. It was somebody's life, you know, pertaining to their, you know, outcome and how they saw. It was really an interesting spectacle to see people be enthralled with being judges from their own chairs.
Weird, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Jordan Peele like foresaw the future or like prepared for what was to come, probably in his insider like Hollywood groups, but I think the trial itself was probably one of the best ways to prepare people for what to see with this movie pertaining to understanding what level of spectacle he was talking about.
Well, I feel like watching this movie has kind of made me realize there's always something like that going on all the dang time.
Yeah.
And makes me feel really bad about it.
True. No, and I think that's one of the things that I feel like really does speak loudly to the writing ability of Jordan Peele, is that unknowingly we as a human race have grown accustomed to drawing ourselves to these types of spectacles, knowingly or unknowingly. I mean, let's just be honest, you know, brutally honest, to be quite frank, we literally talked about one of the biggest spectacles that happens in nerddom every year in San Diego Comic-Con, and we gushed about it because of the information that came out about it, because we were watching, we were looking, we were investigating, we were digging, you know, and we came about with the information that we did and presented it to our audiences because we feel the spectacle needed to be seen, which is exactly what a spectacle does. Yep. Is that it creates the need for drawing more to itself, needing more to see, seek out its attention, to kind of pull people in. But it's also a lot like a blowing balloon. Spectacles can go, you know, can grow and grow and grow until at some point in time they pop, they cause a collapse, something happens. We actually, right before the pandemic hit, San Diego Comic-Con was hitting that collapse point because of the fact that the amount of money it costs and the amount of money that they're charging vendors and the amount of money that it, you know, a lot of the fees and costs that are being incurred, not just on vendors, but on exhibitionists, you know, people who are putting on exhibitions, people who are coming on as celebrities, people who are coming on and doing tables, people who are doing panels, all these types of things. The amount that they were charging a lot of these folks was astronomical. And a lot of people had like started to put into question, you know, at the time, not even like 15 years prior, the costs were nowhere near that amount. But I say all that to say that it created a recognition of how large the spectacle was getting unnecessarily. Mm-hmm. But luckily, in San Diego Comic-Con's favor, the pandemic hit and people began to crave the spectacle again. And in spite of how much people came back in droves this year. And it's interesting just in terms of like where Jordan Peele is really trying to get people to understand the danger of what a spectacle can become and what it can do to those around it. I don't know. What do you think, Amy?
I think it's more... I do agree it's about spectacle, but I think it's more maybe the chasing of the spectacle.
Yes.
The pursuit of it and what it brings. And essentially what like mankind will do for the spectacle. This, in relation to San Diego Comic-Con, you're 100% right. It was... very, very, very like right at that edge of popping.
Yeah. A lot of people in the 2019 Comic-Con, after the events of that year's Comic-Con, were already saying how they were already putting their foot down that they were not going to show up at the next one because of how heinously overcharged they were for like the space that they were using at the event.
Yeah.
So,
quick question: did they adjust prices at all, or no?
Not that I know.
Well, I know they did a smaller Comic-Con, which they were like Comic-Con at home.
Well, they did Comic-Con at home during 2020.
A November show, which was supposed
which
to be
was
like
just
a
the
mini.
Weekend. Yeah, yeah, it was just 3 days.
So that was a smaller price point. Mm. But for this one in particular, for the full fledged week, I have no idea. Usually, I do. But it seemed like everybody was clamoring to go, even if they were going to catch the plague or whatnot. Hmm. So, yeah, I think this movie became more about in pursuit of the spectacle or chasing the spectacle. And each person therein is pursuing the spectacle, except for OJ. OJ was the only one that was not pursuing the spectacle. Mm-hmm. Initially... you think he's kind of maybe pursuing it out of revenge or whatever. And then his arc changes. But like with Jupe, Ricky, his pursuit of the spectacle is for fame. It's for the notoriety. For the filmmaker, he's chasing it for the glory, for the impossible shot. Mm. For Emerald, she's chasing it for the money. She's like, that money shot. We got to get that money shot. We're going to get the money. And I think with Angel... it's for clout, like for
and being the person who's in the know,
who's got the information.
Yeah,
and I think that's the in kind of isolating everybody and then seeing that and using because we keep using the word spectacle,
it's
so frustrating because you start thinking about spectacle and you're thinking of like grand something. It's big. It's huge. And then you start realizing that spectacle can be anything that's keeping your attention for too long. And
what spectacle could be essentially the car crash on the side of the highway that stopped the entire traffic flow, mm-hmm. you know, or spectacle can be the, you know, overturned truck that's over here on this side of the road or things of that nature. I agree. I feel like the chase of the spectacle was a focal point for this film. And I feel like OJ's specific role in this movie was never to chase the spectacle. I feel like from the very beginning of this movie, I feel like OJ's entire arc has always been the pursuit of supporting his sister. Mm-hmm. Because throughout the entire movie, every single thing that he does is an effort to keep her one step ahead. And it's never been in the mindset of what we can bring for me or what we can do for this. It's spending money for her, spending money for the idea, spending money for this, staying awake for doing things. Because he still has all his chores that he's doing. He's like, I still got to get up in the morning. You want to work? Like, he's still doing everything that he can to keep the ranch afloat, all the while supporting her.
Yeah.
Which is why I feel like him still being on that horse is kind of reminiscent to in cinema black cowboys. There was one movie that I feel I believe Jordan Peele was very pronounced in wanting to use it as a theme for the film. I want to say it's called like Buck and the Preacher, or it was a movie that he recognized as not only an inspiration, but wanting to make sure that part of that story element fits.
And a more serious cowboy film, right? Because my brain went to Blazing Saddles, and that's...
Oh, yeah, I was right. 1972's Buck and the Preacher.
Hey, look at
that. It says Jordan Peele specifically chose the cowboy film Buck and the Preacher to feature prominently in the film. It was the first film that I know of that that had black cowboys represented in it. The myth that cowboys were just white guys running around is just not true, but we don't know that because of Hollywood and the romanticized view of a very brutalized era. The film shares a similar spirit. I feel like OJ is that cowboy, because seeing him at the very end on the horse, still standing, still alive, is very reminiscent of what we typically see in the classic cowboy movies, where against the most dangerous of odds, John Wayne is still standing at the end, Clint Eastwood is still standing at the end, you know, and I feel like with that movie, you know, we see OJ as the prominent cowboy in a modern day era cowboy, black cowboy movie. So yeah, there's a lot of different there's a lot of different elements that we can see pertaining to the stories and pertaining to the various performances by the characters. I did want to ask you guys, because this movie had a lot of these moments, was there ever... Oh, did you have something to say, Sarah?
Oh, I wanted to add something real quick that, like, it's sort of a theory, not a theory, but regarding Jupe's story, I also took away kind of undertones of how kind of us as a society and kind of Hollywood deals with people with mental health in cinema and in Hollywood, and that with when something goes wrong on set, like, or any incident that happens on set, it's either a spectacle or they turn a blind eye or quickly kind of usher away or brush away, basically, the incident or what happens with an actor, just to kind of cover it up. Like, not being like, oh, conspiracy theory, but like slightly brutal truth of like having an actor who has like PTSD and something happens on set where they have actively a panic attack, or they spiral and they can't get out of a depressive episode, and having to deal with that. And not all of Hollywood fully accepts it and probably helps aid those people, which that sounds like a long stretch, but also it was regarding
I mean if there's anything, I mean, we're all aware of the exploits that happened on the set during Stanley Kubrick's The Shining.
Yeah.
You know, and Shelley Duvall's, you know, torturous experience with dealing with Stanley Kubrick as well as the rest of the cast and crew. The abuse and everything. And
then Jack Nicholson with him not being able to differentiate himself from the character Jack, which was a really, really, like, not traumatic, but really kind of heartbreaking and heartache type of moment, that he wasn't able to differentiate himself. And he constantly had to keep himself, and he made himself stay in character a whole bunch because he was always referred to as Jack, and Jack Torrance and Jack Nicholson. There is a defined line that should be set.
It's very unfortunate that both names were Jack.
Poor dude.
Pertaining to this movie, like I said, like I was saying earlier, regarding all the things that happened in this movie, was there any scene that you guys remember that really stood out, that either struck you very uniquely, or just in plain terms, did it spook the crap out of you?
Yeah, I already know what mine is.
So let's start with Amy, because
I want Spencer to go. Spencer's excited. Yes.
Okay. For me, it's going to be the scene where Jupe is talking about the incident on Gordy's home. And I think why is because, like, you know, he was just telling the story. He was being kind of excitable, had a smile on his face. And, like, while this was playing out, I was like, I'm sorry, did I stop paying attention to the movie for a quick second? Because I thought this was a story about, like, the horrendous experience you survived. And then the movie just really quickly cuts to that. And I was like, that's not good, my friend. That one really stuck out to me.
Which one?
The one where he's talking about the Gordy's Home incident.
And he's standing there and he's talking, talking about the SNL skit.
Yeah, when he's telling OJ and Emerald about it.
Yes.
Yeah. Gotcha, gotcha. I thought it was the flashback scene.
Oh, it flashes when really quickly in that sequence, but for not just a moment. The full one.
Amy. It didn't, she's like, well, the other scene.
So that moment, yeah, I was like, oh no, we have not dealt with our trauma. Oh no, this is bad. This is bad. One that actually got me excited, but also made my stomach fall out a little bit, was when we see the UFO or whatever they're named now. We see, and I keep calling it the Predator, the UFO, and not the Predator like the sound thing, but it, you know,
the UFO. You use that word Predator incorrectly so many times that night.
No, because I felt, so here's the thing, I felt that the big turn on this UFO, I felt that it was always acting as if it was a Predator. And the reason is because the one sequence when it, I think it's the first or second time that it attacks, and it's daylight, and it sneaks up over the hill, and it moves, and I was just like, this feels like Jaws. This feels like Jaws, but I'm underneath it. This is bad. And I've never had that, like, the reverse flip of it. And I remember just the first time that I saw Jaws, and that the shot with the legs, and they were coming up from underneath, and now it was just above, and the smoothness, and I was like, oh no.
Okay, and well, okay, I get what you're saying there.
Jaws.
Sarah, was there a scene for you?
So what was the question again regarding scenes? Because you said
the, like, scene that stood out the most.
Oh, stood out, because I also heard scared.
Or yeah. Scared, yeah.
Because Defintry, I would say scariest was the...
Okay, we just need one scene. We don't need multiple.
Come back to me, I guess. I was going to bring up the bug, but sure.
Oh.
Okay. Honestly, I feel like for me, one of the more scarier scenes, just because it does actually resonate with what was seen in Fire in the Sky, was the scene of what it looks like inside the UFO.
Oh yeah.
Is this
the one where, like, they're being sucked up, or just
sucked up?
Oh, every scene because in the movie Fire in the Sky, when the guy fully remembers what happens to him, part of that experience is he is, like, held down on a table over a sheet of latex, and they are, like, using knives and things like that, like these little gray bulbous head aliens, and he is screaming, but he has, like, some kind of latex, like, endotube that's going down his throat in his mouth, so he can't be heard. And between the screams that were heard in that scene and the fabric.
This is not a visual podcast, but all of us are, like, wide eyed, like, no, thank you.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This setup is a hard nope. This is like the mass production version of what they showed in that movie. Because ultimately, what we get at the end of them sucking up all those people in Nope is the mutilation and exsanguination of all those people, where it just essentially storms blood on top of their house, which is a crime scene in itself.
Very true.
Because I was like, I don't know how the heck you're going to explain this to anybody.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like,
the police show up and they're like, "You have so much blood.
You have jewelry and wallets that are embedded in the sides of your house, and there's blood."
And there's that one Scooty Puff Jr. on your roof, too.
Yeah. So I feel like that scene really stuck out to me. Nothing really scared me in this movie. The only thing that I really have to say is that movie really resonated in terms of what I was looking for when I talked about expectations. That was, like I said, the Henry Ford production line version of the scene from Fire in the Sky, like making that efficiently work out to mass numbers of people and not just one. So, yeah. Did you figure out your scene yet?
So when it's the scene where Emerald is at the park, and she's trying to take pictures of the, I'm just going to call it the ship, because normally I thought it was an eye at first, but it technically wasn't. But that scene where it's attacking the balloon, and when it bursts, I kind of found that, in a sense, a little bit scary, because at the end, we still don't know what it's kind of... not. We didn't really need to know its purpose of why it was there, but also what could have been if there was something manning the ship, or the entity, or if there was more of that entity coming, that type of stuff. Which I love that underlining sense of the unknown, because that's always a scary thing that you can explore in multiple fashions of media, books, novels, etc. But yeah, if that makes sense. And then the bug was
the praying mantis that was
the little bug that was like hello.
Yeah. Coming around to our roundtable question, I do have a question for the crew that is here, and it's a fairly simplistic question, although Spencer does make it difficult.
I haven't even said anything yet.
Spencer doesn't make it difficult. I do.
Listen to last week's episode.
You did make it difficult.
You did. So the question for the table is, what type of film would you personally like to see Jordan Peele make next? And by type of film, that could be genre, that could be style of film, that could be, you know, a specific type, like if you want him to do a creature feature, or if you want him to do a, you know, romantic comedy or whatever. I want to hear your guys' best thoughts on a potentially new Jordan Peele movie, or a new type of Jordan Peele movie that he'll be coming out with.
It might just be me being jealous and wanting this to go into production, because
being jealous, huh?
Well, in the medium that this story currently is in, I do love it desperately, but I think it needs a little of an unconventional touch to be brought to film. And with that being said, it would be quite a turn, but I don't know how it would play out. I would love to see I Hate Fairyland under Jordan Peele's hands, which is a comic book by Scotty Young.
Yeah, I was going to say, you might need to explain that, but I do agree. That's actually a really good idea.
It essentially is, because I know at the top of the show you had mentioned that Nope has inspiration from The Wizard of Oz, which I was trying to think of, like, in what ways or where I could kind of identify it, and I can think of some. But so I Hate Fairyland is the concept that this girl named Gertie gets sucked into, or falls into, essentially a Land of Oz-esque type of journey. But the problem is she gets stuck for 35 plus years, and she's 35 stuck in like a 6-year-old, 7-year-old's body. And so she has just kind of been going through this Land of Oz-esque place and not doing what she needs to do, and it has some really adult themes, and it's very violent and graphic and all sorts of other things, but I think it would be not a big challenge for Jordan, but considering that most of the time he's more grounded in what he chooses to create, I think it would be an interesting challenge. And also, I like the source material.
Interesting. What about you, Spencer, Sarah?
Okay, well, I wasn't being as detailed.
I know. Sorry. Now I have to really reformulate my thoughts.
I'm so sorry. Like, this now I have to come up with a plot line.
I know.
You don't.
She's like,
don't.
I have
to figure out casting.
I have the executive producer already on the line. He's about to call us. And
you said Spencer makes things difficult.
Sometimes. You always.
At least I acknowledge it.
Okay, I was going a bit more simplistic and just be like, I'd like to see him like do a take on an animated horror movie, mostly because I'd never seen one.
Oh.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, so because I was like, that'd give him a lot more creative like flexibility to just make something because it's animated. So I was like, that seems like that'd be really cool.
That would be really cool. I don't think I've ever seen that, now that you mention it.
Besides Creepshow, because they did that animated special.
Yeah, but it's not. It wasn't really animated. Mm-hmm. It was like moving comics.
Yeah, but I really like
But I see what you're saying. I really do like the idea. Sarah.
So, I would really like to see him do a creature feature. Like, because it's a really interesting genre that I know he would do really well in. Like, because trying to find the right words for it. Because also, I'm trying to think of a plot line, and now I'm just... no offense.
I'm sorry.
No offense, it's okay.
No offense, it's okay.
No, it's okay. But a creature feature, and because he always has the touch of tackling topics that really need to be addressed. So with that, you can go like a whole bunch of routes, and still like that type. Yeah, I really like that. Because
are you thinking like just one creature, or like a versus?
A versus, like. Because I would find like.
I could see him like, because a lot of his roots do date back to the mindset of like unique and simplistic horror built around a complex subject, and I think classic type creature features like that. Yeah. I could see that working. That's really cool. Nice job. Good job.
What about you, Eddie?
Well, since intern Amy decided to turn this into like the Writers Guild official entry. I would see.
Jordan listens to this. Hi, Jordan.
I would like to see Jordan Peele do his take on the 2000 comic, The Sentry. Written by Paul Jenkins. The story is such a unique take on the superhero tale. It's very psychological, and if anybody were to create a very psychologically introspective type film in the MCU, it would have to be Jordan Peele. If you've seen the movie about, or if you've read the story about The Sentry, it's a very interesting take on a hero who should have existed during the golden age of comics, but was intentionally forgotten for a specific reason. And the idea is literally ripped right out of the pages of a Twilight Zone. And I feel like if there's anybody who could pull that off, it would be Jordan Peele. So... not to have to one up someone because they decided to pull from their, you know.
I'm sorry.
But,
you shouldn't be.
I mean, I like the animated horror would be absolutely brilliant to see. Like,
yeah, to be quite frank, the only thing I've seen that's animated horror is like Happy Tree Friends. But that's comedic and horrific. I don't know if I've ever seen an animated horror movie.
Probably because people are like, oh, this is for kids. Well, and then they take them and then it's like, how dare you do this?
I mean, you look at things like, obviously, Family Guy and all. If you can have adult humor in animation, why not horror? So, that's an interesting take.
Will Coraline count?
That's a kid's movie. It's literally based
still.
On... Okay, put your phone down, kiddo.
Yeah.
So, wrapping this whole thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table and talk about whether or not the film passes or fails and how many monocles. I want to go ahead and start with, you know, CEO and next in line to Kevin Feige, Amy over there.
Man, I wish I was next in line to Kevin Feige. I'd be like, hey, buddy.
Yeah. Pulling in that Marvel money.
Pulling in that Marvel money. And then I'd be like, turn around and go, can I get half of this to the VFX artists? Because we need to take care of them.
Yes.
Sorry,
yes.
That's still bugging me. So this film passes for me. I really did appreciate the multiple themes as well as the opportunity to look inward as well as outward at the world we live in and see if I am chasing a spectacle and if so, for what reason. So yeah, I'm going to give this of the Peele Chronicles so far. I'm going to give this a solid 4.6 out of 5 monocles for me.
Why not a perfect 5, if I may ask?
So it's kind of hard right now really to top Get Out. And it's not just because it's his first entry, but because the sheer dread and terror that went with Get Out was so palpable in every scene, to be very honest. with us, there is not as much. It has a different flavor to it. This is just an entirely different movie. It doesn't make it bad. But so far, when he's becoming the new or the master, a new mastermind for horror, it's a departure, but not a bad one.
Sarah.
This movie passes for me. Okay. I really enjoyed the story, the acting performance, even some of the soundtrack choices. Like, it was really well done, and I appreciate it a lot. I have to agree with Amy on it regarding the in juxtaposition to Get Out, of the dread, the sort of making you think about it deeper and going, oh. And both in shock horror and in slightly awe of film style and tackling topics like that. I have to give it a
4.9. Okay.
Just because I really enjoyed it. It doesn't really top Get Out. It meets really close with my opinion for Us.
Okay.
But doesn't completely like be, it's better than Us.
Sounds good. Spencer.
This movie passes for me. Shocker.
Yeah, right.
No, good score. Great acting. Really fantastic story. It is one of those things where, you know, you can just look at it so many ways and find so many things. I've been thinking about it for like the last couple of days. I already saw it twice. Like, there's a lot to like here. It isn't Get Out, but I would also say Get Out did not make me think as much as this movie did, which I really appreciate, actually.
There you go.
So, yeah, this is going to get a 5 for me.
Really. Nice. Ooh. I have to agree. This movie is very much a sci-fi lover and a Jordan Peele lover movie. This movie hits on all those points that you're looking for when you're wanting to see a celestial, like, extraterrestrial type horror film, as well as an opportunity to really dive deep into the psyche of Jordan Peele on another subject that has to do with the human race. In terms of monocles, this movie gets a 5 for me because as a sci-fi lover, I got everything I needed out of it. I really felt fulfilled when I saw it. As a Jordan Peele fan, this movie hit on all those points as well. It gave me a lot to chew on. Just like Spencer said, I'm probably going to have to go back and see it again to really dive deeper into the thoughts that I have. So I'm going to give this movie a 5. I definitely feel like it's a movie you should go check it out if you haven't had a chance to. It's in theaters right now. So yeah, I got the burps. But that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmosophers. Just a reminder, we are in the final 3 days, the final days of July for the giveaway. So if you haven't logged or if you haven't tossed your entry in, head on over to our Instagram page at Filmosophy101. There we have the instructions there pinned at the top of our Instagram page where you have all the instructions to get yourself entered into the drawing. You should check it out. The prize is really cool. I have it still in the living room waiting to be wrapped up and shipped out. It looks really cool. And if you want to know what the heck I'm talking about, head on over to the Instagram page. Check it out. Wow, we'd love to see you there, okay? Also, you can check us out on other social platforms as well as Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at filmlosophy101. There you can interact with us as well. We got great stuff posting, including Spencer's big score starting to post now on the social pages. Amy's Jane Unseen is starting to make its way to the social pages over at her page, which is...
The only place that's ever lived on Instagram, which is Jane Unseen.
You can also check us out on any podcast streaming platform over at iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn. You can tune in to each and every one of those places. You can check us out there. We'd love to hear your thoughts in a comment down below. Subscribe to the show. Give us a 5-star review. Let us know what you think. I think we deserve a 5-star review. What do you think, Spencer?
Yes.
Not just a 1, like Amy said. this was a great show and a great conversation, and I think one of the biggest things that we can always take away from a Jordan Peele movie is its ability to create conversation and its ability to push change, because it always highlights the worst in the people that we see around us as well as in ourselves. So check out the movie. You won't be disappointed. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm intern Amy.
I'm Sarah.
Class dismissed.